This is the photograph, an aerial photograph of Dom Bristje, and as you can see, there are some buildings visible on it from the aerial photograph. Now, from the landward side at present, it's not possible to see any, on the ground, to see any buildings. One can see heaps of stones. But there are accounts from the last century, accounts from 1802 and then the middle of the century, which describes buildings with doorways, actual doorways, to be seen there. And the location of the buildings on the western edge, for instance, and of a large building in the centre with a doorway, as you can see on the photograph, well, they're not visible from the ground at present, probably because of a lot of erosion on the landward side from Dom Bristje. They are visible on the photograph here, and those accounts are not just make-believe from the last century. They are actual accounts, and they've been verified by these photographs. And what we want to do is to get out there and see what these buildings are like, measure them, and possibly be able to suggest a date for the buildings, and therefore a date after which the dune must have collapsed, the land must have collapsed.
Before the time of aerial photography now, what could people have seen from the mainland?
Well, they could. The accounts from the last century are so clearly, agree so clearly with this aerial photograph here that obviously they could see a lot more then than we can see now. At the moment, you can only see some rubble stones on it, but could not certainly identify buildings there without this photograph.
Have you got your own theories?
I have. If this is, as it appears to be on the photograph, if it is a long rectangular building, as it seems to be on the photograph there, it would appear to be that it's likely to be a medieval building and that therefore the collapse is quite late. In other words, that the reference in history to the collapse of a dune in this barony of Tiaráli, now it doesn't mention the exact headland, it gives it a different name, Dún Rós, but the mention of a collapse in 1393, of what was obviously a major collapse that had got into the annals, would seem to be borne out by the building, by a long rectangular building there, and that is the truth, rather than the folklore that it was St. Patrick in his confrontation with the pagan god Crumduff who broke it off. So that in a choice between, say, the 5th century and the 14th century, at the moment it's looking like the 14th century. What we hope to show today is to be able to make some comment one way or the other on that by getting out there and examining it.
Well, what is the legend and how old is the legend?
Well, the legend is a very common one of a confrontation between Patrick and the pagan god Crumduff. I leave that to my father to deal with the folklore side of it.
Patrick Caulfield, can we talk to you? You're a man who has been looking at Dún Bristje for what, 60 years?
No, yes, 70 years, I suppose, since I saw it first.
And you know the legend that's common in this area. What is that legend?
Well, the legend is common to all over Ireland. I mean, it's been gathered in the folklore and it's been published. But the legend I got it from my next door neighbour. And this was that after Patrick finished on Croagh Patrick, he decided to visit Fochill. Now, Fochill is within about 5 miles of the dune, Dún Patrick. And when he came to Fochill, he heard about this chieftain named Crumduff, who was very severe on the people. And he decided to come and try and convert him to Christianity. And the day he came towards the dune, Crumduff had two dogs at that time, and he set them on people to tear them apart. When he heard the Patrick was approaching, he whistled for his dogs. Now, the dogs were hunting with his son in a place called Glenlossary, that's a little glen near Beldarry. So he must have a great whistle because it's about 6 or 7 miles there. At any rate, the dogs were supposed to come, and when Patrick saw them approaching, he made a circle around himself with his crozier. And when the dogs then came to the edge of the circle, instead of attacking him, they lay down and they licked his feet. Now, the old Shanachie, Michael Regan Belderig, who told me that, he used to say in Irish, Líshid síos aige chosa, agus líshid a chosa. That was how he told the story. Well, then, When Crumthorne saw that the dogs were a failure, he retreated towards a big fire he had, into which he threw people at different times. And when Patrick approached the fire, Crumthorne was standing beside it, ready to throw Patrick in. Patrick picked up a stone, cut the sign of the cross on it, and threw it into the fire. And the fire went down through the ground and left a huge hole there that is still there on the headland. And it's known as Polnishan Chinny or Polnishan Thinne. There are two different names for it. But in my place, out in Belderg, they call it Polnishan Chinny. That's associating it with the fire. Crumthorne then retreated into his castle. And when Patrick came, he wouldn't allow him in. So Patrick went back from the castle a bit and he struck the ground with his crozier and he cut Crumthorne off from the land. And they say that he was on the island there until he died. He was eaten by midges. That's how they described his inn.
Martin Downs, you're setting off for the island with us. What do you hope to find there?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm not very clear at this point. A big thing from my point of view is that opportunity has arisen to go out there and to log what's on that island. Now, how important that may be, I have no way of knowing. And I won't really have any true idea of what I need to do on the island until I go and see it. It's very difficult. You can't really see much of the top from the mainland, as I think you may know yourself. So I'm going to go out there and record what's there. Later, I may think of doing comparisons between it and areas on the mainland, but at this point I have no way of knowing what I should be doing.
Now, we're shortly going to take off for Dún Briste in a helicopter.
I hope so.
Does that worry you at all?
Not in the least. I'm not the slightest bit worried about taking off or landing on it. No, I have no fear of heights, thanks be to God, and for that reason I suppose I don't worry about it.
Did you ever think, Patrick, that you would be able to land on it one day?
Well, no. I always had I always looked at it and said, well, it'd be lovely to land there, just now for the sake of finding out what ruins and what was left there from the old times. And I never dreamt that I'd ever get the chance. I hope I'd be able to make it today.
We're sitting now, waiting now on Down Patrick Headland, and a lot of people have gathered to see this takeoff of this expedition to this stack or this island which hasn't been landed on or stood on by human beings for about 600 years. And somewhere now in the distance, this helicopter is coming in and he's going to land here on the headland, take the archaeologist Seamus Caulfield and the biologist Martin Downs and the RTE crew onto the island. It's only about 80 yards across, and as a matter of fact, somebody once drove a golf ball there, and we hope when we get on the island, apart from any archaeological finds, we hope to find that missing golf ball. The helicopter is coming in now pretty low over Dún Briste, and now he's coming close to us, and presumably he's going to try to land in the car park on the headland, if he can find space among all the cars that have come here this late afternoon. It's just after 5:30 in the evening, a sunny evening on the headland, not too much wind, though the weather was very, very windy earlier, very dark, very gloomy. Now it's brightened up, there's a blue sky, and it looks like as if we're going to have a nice trip across to Dún Briste and be able to do the work there that the archaeologist and the biologist want to do. Red helicopter is coming in now, and he's coming down right here into the car park. I must say the archaeologist and the biologist are very excited about this. This is something they've both been dreaming about for a long time, and obviously their ambition is about to be fulfilled. The chopper's coming right down now. He's landing now, and in a few minutes we hope to be aboard, take off on this voyage of discovery to a little bit of land which somebody said looked like a piece of layer cake dropped in the ocean, which hasn't been stood upon for 600 years. And the helicopter now, his engines are slowing down, and we're going to go aboard in a few minutes and hopefully take off for Doombrishta.
So what I'm going to do is go out. I'll do an approach. I'll come to a hover. There's not much room on it. There's little buildings, are obviously little ruins of mass. So as I came over, and I'll lower this thing gently onto the ground. But I can't afford to lower its full weight down because I don't know what the surface is like. So I'll be holding enough pitch to keep it light. For that reason, I don't want anybody moving until Alec, when I give him the word, will get out. And he'll open the door. And remember, there's not much room when you get out. Don't race away from the helicopter and fall into the tide. So get out, you know, gently and firmly, if that's the proper word, and do whatever it is you have to do. And then stand and sort of far away, but not far enough away, so that when I do lift this thing off the ground, it'll clear the island. There's not much room out there.
We're lifting off now for the island of Doombrishta, and as well as wearing our seat belts, we're all of us also wearing life jackets. And the pilot has told us that the wind on the island will be about 25 to 30 knots. We're now up over the headland, leaving the car park far behind. And it's only about 80 yards across to the island, which broke off from the mainland many centuries ago. And the island itself is about, they say, the size of a football pitch. And we're now over the sea. And the pilot is making a sharp turn, and it's a very beautiful evening now. We've chosen a good day or a good evening, apart from the wind. And on the right now, I can actually see the island. We're coming right into it. And the pilot is obviously trying to judge where he's going to make his landing. He won't be able to touch right down on the island. He'll have to come very close, and then we'll have to clamber down. He's making another turn now, hoping he can get it on the next one. It's now on our left-hand side. He's now almost over it, and I think he's going to come down now and try to get us off the helicopter. Apart from the 30-knot wind that he says is blowing on the island, we'll also have to guard against the 50-mile-an-hour blades of the helicopter. A great flock of seagulls have just risen up from the sea, obviously scared by the sound of the helicopter rotors. He's coming quite close now, and I think he's been buffeted a little bit by the wind up here. The cliffs down from the island are pretty sheer, and I'm told they're about 150 feet from the island, top of the island, down to the sea, which is quite calm, a few white caps, but relatively calm. And we can now see, we're so close to Doombrishta now, we can see the wall of the settlement, whatever it may be. The archaeologist is going to find out. We can see the wall of the settlement, what's left of it. He's now right over the island, a couple of feet now from where he's hoping to put us down. It's alarmingly close to the side of the cliff, about 6 feet, I would say, so we have to get out on the other side. And even there, it seems to be pretty narrow. I would say the whole island looks about, from the helicopter, about 20, maybe 25 feet across. But maybe it seems as narrow as that. I think he's actually trying to get a right down on the ground. But the problem is how we are going to be able to get out of this helicopter on such a narrow strip. I think the island is something in the shape of a triangle, so I think we're at the narrowest point. He's got the doors open, and the co-pilot has now stepped out, and he's only trying to get us out now. He's keeping the rotors going because he can't afford to stay here. He's going to leave us on the island for some hours and then hopefully come back and collect us. And now the doors are open. We're unfastening our seatbelts, and the first man out is the man who's waited all these years to stand on this little piece of land. Not only did he get out, he sat down. The next out is Eve Holmes, our photographer. Eve is out, and she's going to photograph the rest of us now, the archaeologist and the biologist, and then the rest of the RTE team. They're all out safely, landing very inelegantly on the grass. That was a very tricky landing. We're all out. We're all stretched here on the grass, and the island is much narrower than we thought it was, and the helicopter is now making off again. But we're all here, except the sound operator lost some of his batteries. I think they blew over the cliff.
Patrick Caulfield, now you're the first man to have set foot on Dún Briste for probably 600 years. And for a man of 77, isn't that your age?
77
you
plus,
made, you
yes.
made a quite a good landing.
A very good landing.
A little bit, you rolled over, but quite
well,
good.
Well, we had to do that, yes.
How does it feel?
Well, it's a wonderful feeling to be able to say that I landed on Dún Briste. I've been looking at it for 70 years or more, but I never dreamt that I would ever see the day that I'd be able to stand on it.
Does it seem smaller to you than it did from the mainland?
Well,
now that you're on it.
The picture seemed to be much smaller than it is now. I think it's larger than it showed from the picture.
And then you thought it would be?
I was afraid we wouldn't be able to have room at all on it.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's narrow. It's very.
Oh,
narrow.
It's very narrow. Very narrow. But it's more extensive, more longer than I thought it would be. Yes.
But you have to watch your step, obviously.
Oh well, you can't. You must watch your step, and you shouldn't do it. Have a point of pushing, and you're walking around here in the dark. No, I don't know how they ever built houses out here. I mean, it's hard to imagine what kind of times were in it when people had houses here, because I couldn't see a family being reared around on the edges of these cliffs.
Are you happy, too, that your son landed with you?
Well, I am. I'm very happy that Seamus had the chance of coming here. And well, he was always interested in this place.
He's been as curious as you were.
Oh, he was. Once he knew that there were some ruins on it, he was very anxious to get out here.
Seamus, we've walked across these hummocks of grass, aren't they? It's most extraordinary formation.
It's a most extraordinary growth. I've never seen anything like it, an ungrazed area, to have this type of grass growing up so long here. I'd say that Martin is going to be very interested in this. But what I'm really interested in is that the buildings are so well preserved here and so high. I knew there were traces of buildings, but I didn't imagine that there was anything as well preserved. For instance, just at this up at this end of the dune here, which we are now, I knew there was a house here, but I didn't realise that the few stones on the edge here were so well preserved that it preserved such a fine wall.
Well, there's another wall here. What are these here? What's this?
Well, you see, look at this here. This is a find we haven't... No, this is the only... I wasn't hoping for a find, but if I was to ask for a find, that's the very one I'd look for.
What is it?
It's a quern. It's a rotary quern. And it happens that I've... they're my main... Those were my main study... Early on, my master's thesis actually was completed on these, so that's the one find.
Right,
if I was looking for a find, that's the one I'd be looking
describe
for.
Describe it for me.
A circular stone with a hole in the middle, used for grinding corn, but often also ending up in graveyards or on monastic sites and used as burial slabs. And here, well, here it's sitting up on the wall. It would appear to be left there as if it was marking something. And it's rather unusually displaced. You see the way it's broken here, and part of it
it's
over to one side there.
Way,
it's,
yeah.
It's broken in half, and one part of it over to one side. Now, what would have moved it like that? I don't know.
Would it be just the collapse of the wall, perhaps?
I don't know. We're only here about 5 minutes, and we've still to try and figure out, you know, what state the buildings were in at the time that it broke off from the that it broke from the mainland. We'll just have to try and figure that out. But this is the most unusual. And if I was to ask for one find out here, I'd
ask for
that
would satisfy you.
Yes,
that would be enough.
That would be enough. Yes, and there it is.
Any at this stage, any idea at all as to how it may have got in this place, in this position?
Not in the position on the wall there. Obviously, when this was a monastic site here or a religious site, they don't spend all their time praying. They obviously have to live here as well. And querns are a very common find on monastic, on religious sites. So it would be quite, you know, quite to be expected here. And among the stone finds, I suppose among finds, is one of the things that I should have thought of that could be lying around.
You didn't expect it?
But there
it
is. I didn't expect it. I never thought of it until I just saw it now.
Martin Dance, we're only about 10 minutes on the island, so perhaps it's a little soon to ask you what you found or what you're looking for.
Well, I've just had a quick look round here. It's not too unlike what I might have guessed was here. There's much less sea pink than I had judged, though. There's a lot of this grass, this fescue, and surprisingly, it has built up a tremendous depth of peaty material under it, and that's what's impressing me more than anything at this point, is just the volume. There's maybe, oh, perhaps in some places, a metre of this stuff.
And why is that?
Overlying the soil. Well, this grass does grow like that. It does do that, but it has been undisturbed here, and it seems to have gone on. You can see yourself it has encased some of the walls around. It's just that you don't see it like this very often on the mainland. Aside from that, there are a lot of plants that almost anyone could have forecast would be here. I see sea beet here, close relative of sugar beet. Usually grows at the seaside, that's not surprising. I see broadleaf dock here. A lot of plants, just as you might find at almost any seaside in this part of the country, any rocky seaside.
There's nothing flourishing that you wouldn't find, say, on the mainland.
There's nothing flourishing here that I've seen so far that you wouldn't find on the mainland. There are a lot of insects and insect-like animals here too, and I'll just have to try making a collection of some of those. There's an amount of lichen or lichen, this yellow material, on the walls. It's mainly a species called Calaplaca, and again, it's one that you find at the seaside. There's nothing very amazing about it. What's interesting me just at the moment, I was thinking about it just before you came up there, is the if we can get any sort of dating for these walls.
Yes.
It might be possible for us to make inferences about how fast this grass can accumulate the peaty material under it simply by measuring it up along the walls.
Patrick, you've been a couple of hours on the stack now.
Have we been that length?
We have.
I didn't realise it was so that length.
Obviously you're enjoying yourself.
Oh, I'm enjoying it. It's a wonderful experience for anybody. To think that we're standing in a place that nobody stood for 600 years.
Do you think you've been of some help to your son, Seamus, on the...
Well, I always had an interest in archaeology, and I suppose I gave him an interest in it when he was a young lad. I pointed out all the old remains and ruins and traces of the past that were around the Belderig area, of course, and then he got an interest in it, and later on then he took it up as his career. So he's done quite a lot of work in the archaeological field back in the Belderig area and back in Erris, all over the County Mayo.
Well, from what he's discovering this evening on the stack, it may be that perhaps the legend itself may not be true, but the period may be indeed right.
Well, the date of the collapse of the the joining land between this place and the mainland. It's difficult to think of that we're out of the mainland now. But that date, I think, would be fairly true or right, because MacFarlane's annals were pretty accurate. So he gave the date as, I think I told you before, as 1393, yes. There'd be 100 years before Columbus sailed for America, so it's quite a bit back.
And local people then may not have been far out at all in their estimations.
There was, of course, there was the Crumduff actually lived in this area, and he probably dwelt out here too in the early days of
you
Christianity.
Believe that?
Oh, I do, because usually these tales are handed on for generations, you know, and they're actually usually correct. Now, the name, the old man, I think I told you before too, or maybe I didn't, the old man beside me, he gave the name of the chieftain who lived here as Ljodrisk. Now, I got an old map, a very old map, and this place is marked on the map as Dún Ljodrisk. So the old man may have been that he didn't take up the name correctly, but he had the end of it correct anyway. And then I have seen the name in a few other places, and it was given as Ljodrisk, G-E-O. You have D-E-O, G-E-O, and L-E-O, Drisk, for the chieftain who lived here.
You're fond of lore about this part of the world. And you've had no problem walking about the island, what there is of it?
No, well, you see, since I was able to walk, I've been out in the mountain with a gun. And, you know, if you've ever travelled over the bogs of Mayo with a gun, you know, that's the kind of hummocks
terrain
you have to travel over, you see, and you get used to it. And we develop a kind of a sailor's wag when we walk to on account of that.
Seamus, you've been very busy now for about an hour and a half with your tapes and your measuring rods, and now you're busy with your camera. What are you finding?
Well, obviously, with a two-hour time to spend on here, there's no possibility of making a proper survey. What we're trying to do is to photograph as much as possible and get the basic measurements here on the buildings. What is clear is that this is not where we're sitting now. Is not a simple house. There is one long wall which runs right across the island, and then jutting out from it, there are two walls which curve around and form a building in front of this long wall cutting across the island here. There seems to be much the same type of thing, but at right angles to it, behind us here as well, but largely collapsed into the sea, but quite a bit of it standing there.
So what we're sitting in now, which has the shape of almost a room.
Yes, it appears it is possibly a large house, possibly even a church building. There are certain things which I had hoped we would be able to verify having come out here, and that would be whether it was mortar built or not. I still don't know. There's no trace of any mortar now, but the way in which the walls have collapsed inwards on themselves would suggest almost as if a rubble core has disappeared, has been washed out of the walls here completely in this exposed position. So it may be that there was a certain amount of mortar building. I don't know. It certainly has not got a regular building to it, medieval feel to it. I think it could be very much earlier, and in fact I now have very grave doubts about the 1393 date. I think that what's appearing here has all the appearance of being earlier to me.
How earlier?
I'm not saying. I haven't an idea. I haven't a clue. It does look as if I think that it would be, you know, at home on a monastic site. There is one slab upright over there at the end of that wall. There's another small slab over there. It has the appearance of, you know, a quite normal monastic site or religious site here. And obviously when you look at, you know, what's just left out here so far out in the sea, and then this expanse of water between us and the mainland there, and then other buildings in on the landward side, this could have been a very large site. Now, of course, virtually totally gone.
Well, as far as the famous legend goes...
As far as the legend goes, the legend is wide open again, and quite a possibility, because as regards the date, it could be possibly not as early as St. Patrick, but
pretty soon
early
after.
Christian rather than medieval, yes. Pre-1000 rather than post-1000 AD.
In the time you've got left now, what are you going to do?
I'm going to whip around as rapidly as possible with the ranging rod which I have here, or with the staff which I have here, to give a scale to the features. The only detail, the best detail that we can take back, I think, is by rapidly photographing as much as possible of this.
Well, we're going to have to leave reasonably soon, I imagine, when the helicopter comes back for us. Will you be able to decide from what you bring back in the nature of notes and photographs a little more than you're able to tell me now?
I possibly will. Not a great deal more. There is nothing medieval. There's no medieval feel about this. There is nothing medieval that I can see here. I think if we had found medieval buildings here, for instance, one could say, well, the collapse certainly was later than that. All we can say about it now is that, you know, you're talking about a date after which it must have happened. And with the type of buildings we're looking at here, I don't see anything, you know, that we can put a finger on a particular date for this. Rather vague, I'm afraid.
After 2 hours, just over 2 hours on Dún Briste, on this stack, the archaeologists and the biologists have done what they can, as much work as they can, and the helicopter is now
coming back to land.
It's coming right over us now, this Bell twin-engine helicopter, and hopefully we can get it on board again just as successfully as we were able to land 2.5 hours ago. We're all hiding in the hummocks now, hoping we're out of the way of the rotor blades, and he's managing to come down. He's within about 3 feet now of the surface of the island. The doors are open, and I think we're all right. I think we're going to be able to take off again and be back in a matter of minutes on the mainland.
Seamus Caulfield, you've landed safely. How would you sum up the expedition?
Very successful, tremendous to have got the opportunity, and very grateful to RTE that we did get the opportunity to get out there and to see the buildings. As I said to you out there, it is impossible to do a detailed survey, but we have got a lot of photographs. We've got a lot of some basic measurements from it. We have an idea of what the buildings are like. They do look much earlier than I anticipated. I didn't think that those large buildings would look quite as primitive as they did. And there is, of course, a lot more buildings out there than can be seen even on the aerial photographs. They're much more extensive. And then there was the one find, of course.
Do you know now what the dimensions of that stack are?
Yes, well, from the very high altitude aerial photographs, we had estimated something between 50 and 60 metres long and about 20 metres wide. And that's, while it doesn't look that from the cliff top, that's what the measurements turned out to be, actually.
So it was accurate?
Yes, it was accurate. So that while it looked much smaller, the measurements that we had in mind were correct for it. Now, the building across the centre of it is about 11 metres long. It's interesting that it's about the same size as the church ruins which survive on the landward side here on the mainland. And I just wonder if an idea I had before going out, seeing that the dimensions are so close between the two buildings, between the building out there and the one in here on the mainland,
that it might have been part of it.
That's not so much part of it, but that seeing that this was a place of pilgrimage for a very, very long time, that if the original site of the pilgrimage outside collapsed, did they in fact transfer it onto the land here? There is a folk story about Crumduff and St. Patrick, which to a certain extent suggests that. There is a story that Patrick was building a church out on the headland, out on the Dún Briste, and that every night Crumduff came along and knocked it down, and that he eventually cut Crumduff off, left him out there, and built the church in on the landward side here. That's a version of the Crumduff story which may contain a germ of truth in it about the building of two churches.
It's now 8 months since we were out on Dún Briste, and you're sitting there, Seamus and Martin, surrounded by your notes and your findings. Have you had any reason to change your mind about what you said when you stepped off the helicopter?
Well, apart from the problem of 8 months later finding it hard to recollect exactly what I said in the excitement of getting out onto Dún Briste, as far as I can remember, my conclusion just before we left the rock was that the buildings could be quite early because they showed no evidence of any mortar building in them. They were very primitively built. And I did say at that time that they could be earlier than the date of 1393, which is referred to by MacFirbish in the Annals of MacFirbishie. Looking at it now, though, and having looked for parallels for these buildings, I would think that, in fact, the date of 1393 is the more likely one. The building is clearly a longhouse. It is, and I can show you here some illustrations, some plans of buildings, for instance, ones from Devon in the 13th, 14th century date, of longhouses, farm buildings, which incorporate this longhouse idea of having the dwelling at one end and the animals down at the other end. And you may remember this sketch here, for instance, of the building on Doombridge, does show such a longhouse with, again, the doorway in the middle of the long wall, and down at one end, this narrow drain going out of one of the gable ends. And that seems to be a byre drain to take where the animals were tethered down at that end of the building.
So, in other words, this was a style of medieval building.
Yes, and
in both these islands.
Yes, it seems so. But it was, yes. But it's interesting in that it is not the style of building which you had in the North Mayo area up to the beginning of this century, where animals were kept in the longhouses. But in that case, the drainage trench ran across the main axis and went out in the two the drain at the end where the animals were went out in the long wall just beside the doors.
Martin, what have you found since you studied
I've been able to confirm that the woodlice that were there. You remember there were huge numbers of woodlice down among the roots of the red fescue and the sort of fibrous peat that was down there. Well, they are mainly, a particularly common species, and one that we might have forecast would have been there, and one that's pretty good at spreading too. So that ties up, that's, as I say, more or less what it would have forecast. We could go on now and we could look at what the genetic makeup of those woodlice is by comparison with woodlice on the mainland. Seamus was saying there about having a small sample of his settlement, but if you think when that stack was cut off, well, you also had a small sample of the population of woodlice in Ireland out on it, and that sample mightn't have been very much like the population of woodlice in Ireland. If you just imagine that perhaps a red-haired Irish couple were marooned out there, well, you'd expect they're to find today that the offspring on that island would have a lot of red hair. Well, you could have that kind of situation, or of course you could have new forms of genes developing, and we could go on now and we can look biochemically at those genes. And well, Doombridge is very interesting, and it could form part of a system for looking at gene movements in populations.
I put it to you, would there be any purpose now in both of you going back to Doombridge?
Well, a tremendous amount, in that we simply examined very briefly the buildings on the site there. We took some very rough measurements of it, but obviously to do a proper detailed survey and examine the site in detail, this is without ever doing any excavation. Simply to survey the site properly would take quite a few days' work, and it's I had rather cold feet even after coming in, but it's the interest. I would, yes, very much like to complete that job.
You, Martin?
Well, the main importance of all this was always archaeological, and it's just valuable that a biologist can go on these kinds of things just in case something shows up, and particularly to make records. And yes, I would like to go back, and I would like to improve the records I have. And if Seamus can screw up his courage to going back there again and opportunity presents itself, maybe sure I'll be with them.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.